Here on Gadget Lab, we dive deep into the tech universe, tackling questions like, is giving companies access to your genetic material a good idea? And are the latest phone releases really that different than the last ones? We want to help you make informed decisions about what is worth your attention. And here's something that is undeniably worth your time, a digital subscription to Wired. Lucky for you, we are giving Gadget Lab listeners an exclusive discount, 20% off an annual subscription to Wired. Just visit wired.com and use the promo code GL20 to get 20% off a digital subscription. Use GL20 to get exclusive access to stories on the latest innovations like AI, deepfakes, and VR, as well as today's most talked about people in technology.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Lauren.
Mike.
Was Tuesday's Apple event everything you ever wanted?
In what way?
USB-C? You finally got a USB-C iPhone?
You know, it's a low bar when your life is that affected by a charging standard. But yes, life has already changed, and I can tell you how. And that was not even the most interesting part of Tuesday's Apple event.
I cannot wait to hear more.
I bet you can't, Mr. Pixel.
Whatever. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Gadget Lab. I am Michael Calori. I'm a senior editor at Wired.
And I'm Lauren Good. I'm a senior writer at Wired.
We're also joined this week by Wired Reviews editors Adrian So, sitting over here right next to me.
Hey, guys.
And Julian Chokatu, sitting over here on the other side.
Hello, hello.
Yes. Things have already gone off the rails in studio here. We just have to let you all know, but you're not going to hear that part of the podcast.
That's right. That's right. We've been chatting, testing the microphones, testing the microphones.
Telling people what we had for breakfast.
Well, we are all here in the studio together because this week, the three of you went down to Cupertino, California for Apple's big September event. As it has done every year for more than a decade, Apple announced new iPhones. There were also new Apple Watches and some new software features to go along with the new products. And as we've talked about on the show before, a lot of these updates can feel kind of samey with iterative feature enhancements coming out every year.
Samey. I like that word. Next time I put that in a Wired article, I expect you will not edit it out.
Oh, never. Never. It's my favorite neologism. But we should start today's discussion with the one big change that Apple made to its phone lineup that is not samey. Apple has ditched the iPhone's Lightning port and replaced it with a USB-C port. Julian, I want to start with you. Tell us, why did Apple do this to us?
So USB-C, Apple has been adding it to its devices. It was like one of the first companies to add USB-C to a MacBook back in 2015. And it has slowly been adding that port to its other devices like iPads, except, you know, the last holdout has been the iPhone. Last year, the European Union ruled that all phones, tablets, and cameras by the end of 2024 are required to have a USB-C port. So that kind of, you know, Apple had a decision to make. Do we just not sell phones in the European Union? Do we just change the port in the European Union and use Lightning everywhere else? But of course, I think this change was going to come at some point eventually. So this is the year that it's happening. But also, you know, they probably were going to do it at some point anyway. It's worth noting that they collect licensing fees and make a lot of money from all the other companies that make Lightning accessories. So this was just an opportunity that they were probably holding, pushing away as far as possible so they can collect as much as possible. And now it's changing. And so now we have a USB-C port, which means that you can use the same cable you have for your MacBook, your iPad, your, you know, Android phone, if you weirdly also have an Android phone and a MacBook and an iPad, but other devices.
Switch, your headphones.
Yeah, your Nintendo Switch, gaming consoles, wireless earbuds, all sorts of things have USB-C nowadays. Even electric scooters can charge with USB-C now. So there's no reason not to have this port. And hopefully it cuts down on the number of e-waste by not having all these different types of cables that you need to buy. And you can just stick with that one single connector.
But it's not actually just one cable for USB-C, is it?
Yeah, that's the downside of USB-C is that there's so many different standards. And so one cable that you just buy for like $20 on Amazon probably doesn't have the capabilities that you might be looking for. For example, the new iPhone supports USB-C over DisplayPort, which allows you to connect, like, for example, your MacBook to an external display. And then you can just use a USB-C cable to connect the display and have that display outputted to that external monitor.
So you can do that with an iPhone.
You can do that with an iPhone now, but you have to make sure that the cable you buy supports DisplayPort over USB-C. And you got to look at like the fine print, you know, and the product information and all that kind of stuff. Same thing is true for like power standards. People don't really know that cables actually have a specific wattage output. So just because you have a MacBook and you're using some random cable, MacBooks usually require like 60 watts of power. If your charging adapter can output that, that's great. But then if you buy like a cheapo cable that only supports like 20 to 30 watts, you're not going to get that max power, and you might get a notification saying, hey, your charger's not powerful enough or something like that. Apple is going to be shipping with a 60 watt charger in the box for the new iPhone model. So you at least can use that to charge your MacBook. However, if you have a MacBook Pro, those need a little more power. So you'll probably have to pay Apple a little bit extra for, the higher wattage charging cables.
I was actually wondering about that yesterday as we were sitting in the theater, like fumbling crazily about for like whatever thing we could like plug in to charge whatever all of our thingy-ma-bobbers. I was just like, how many reports are we going to get in the next few years of like, you know, I keep my Lightning cable in like a kind of a Raiders of the Lost Ark type special chest versus like all of my USB cables that I'm like throwing the coffee off of them because they've been sitting in like my mug holder for like 4 months or whatever. Like how many reports we're going to get of people like blowing their iPhones out because they just plugged whatever into whatever, wherever. But
yeah, I mean, even with the change though, like they pretty much admitted that you would have to buy another cable to take advantage for the iPhone 15 Pro. Those support a higher data transfer speed. So Lightning cables have been limited to 480 megabits per second. They weirdly decided to just stick with that same specification for the standard iPhone models. So with the USB-C, you're still getting 480 megabits per second. Which is just weird because that's such a really old standard. And most phones these days, like for example, the 499 Pixel 7a has USB 3.2 support, whereas, you know, iPhone's only offering USB 2.0. But the iPhone 15 Pro does support USB 3, which allows for 10 gigabits per second data transfer speeds. But they said in the keynote, they were like, you'll have to buy your cable separately, which
yeah,
really you're paying that much for
this is the
very
pro,
expensive
the pro level.
The pro level,
yeah.
But they're still only providing a limited cable in the box. I don't know why they couldn't just bundle like the pro cable that allows for that type of data speeds. But, you know, Apple's got to make money somehow.
Well, Julian, you mentioned in your story that you wrote ahead of the event about the big switch to USB-C that one of the reasons that Apple was so insistent on Lightning until the European Union stepped in. And let's just give a little round of applause here for the European Union. My goodness. I mean, everyone thinks that they're just like taking months off vacation, but actually they're passing GDPR, Digital Markets Act, Digital Services Act, and, you know, right to repair laws in France. And all of a sudden they're like, Apple, change your charging standard. Like, they're accomplishing quite a bit these days. But you wrote in your story that the reason why Apple was so stuck on Lightning was because it was a source of revenue for them when third parties were basically licensing that technology to make, what was it called, like the MiFi program?
Yeah, the made for iPhone, yeah. MFI or
MFI,
I
guess,
I don't
yes.
know if they call it MFI or whatever. But yeah, so I mean, there were a lot of rumors that saying that Apple was going to implement an MFI program for USB-C, and that would also turn it into a way for a consumer buying a cable would then see like a label that says, oh, this one supports DisplayPort, this one supports fast charging or whatever. But they didn't announce anything like that. They presented zero information about any type of MFI program. So it seems like at present, they're just is nothing. And I think maybe they're just going to rely on the new revenue that they've been collecting with MagSafe. And since sort of maybe that's sort of the way that they're going. So it's not like there's a complete loss. They did introduce MagSafe and a lot of companies are making MagSafe accessories. They're still collecting licensing fees from that. So I assume maybe they realized, well, it's fine if we lose the Lightning Connector revenue because now we have MagSafe.
So it obviously is a big win for consumers and for people who buy iPhones because now they're going to have one less piece of clutter in their lives. And hopefully they'll be able to reuse cables across devices as long as they buy ones that have all the capabilities that they need from all their different devices. And we were expecting it. As Lauren mentioned, you wrote a story leading up to it. So it was sort of a big moment that everybody was waiting for. But Apple spent maybe a minute and a half, 2 minutes on it and just breezed right past it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It seems like, you know, it seems like from the lead up, especially earlier this year, maybe it was last year where there were some executives talking about it on a panel and they actually came out and said that iPhone will switch to USB-C, but they sounded very like disappointed about it. Like they were like, yeah, I guess we got to do it. Those damn European laws. I can't tell really why they would be so disappointed because they haven't really changed Lightning for 11 years. And there's no real changes or improvements in terms of data transfer speeds or charging speeds. So it's like, why would you be upset about your consumers being able to now use the same cable for all your devices and also have access to those faster speeds? Like they're claiming that the iPhone 15 Pro has, I think it was 20 times faster data transfer speeds over the iPhone 15 because that's using the older spec. So it's like, that's the kind of difference that we should have had for some time now, but it just hasn't. And thanks to the European Union.
Maybe it's hard for like executives and consumers alike to just imagine like how much of a change this would be when you're actually holding like a device in your cable in the hand. Like I've had Apple devices for like, who knows how long, so many Lightning connectors, there's one plugged in everywhere, you know, and your MagSafe, so it's fine. But it's just like the physical act of like remembering to put, you know, a USB-C into your iPhone versus like a USB-C cable. Like that's like an actual physical, you know, change that's going to happen in the real world that's going to be affecting a lot of people really soon. And, you know, that's pretty mind-blowing.
Yeah, I mean, it's also worth remembering that there's still a lot of people that don't know. What, like my barber was asking me, should I get the new iPhone? And I was like, well, they're changing the port. And he's like, what's Lightning, right?
Yeah.
They don't know the terminology and
it's
that's fine.
Cable.
Right. It's a cable. And so there's a lot of people that are going to be like, what the heck is this new port that I haven't really had to use? They might not quite understand that. And there might just inevitably be a lot of these Lightning accessories becoming e-waste quickly because people don't know what to do with them. They're like, I can't use that cable. So I'm hoping people just give them to people who are not upgrading and hold on to them in some other ways. But it's just an inevitability that there will be like that some Lightning accessories that are just not going to be useful now.
Yeah.
If you're upgrading.
This makes me think that we should be doing a guide for how to responsibly dispose of your Lightning cables. A former Wired reporter who's now the editor-in-chief of MIT Tech Review, Matt Honan, messaged on, was it Twitter or Threads, one of the sites and said, Lauren, what the F am I supposed to do with my Lightning cables now? And I said, just throw them all in a box so someday you can tell your daughters that you had to trudge uphill to school both ways in the snow while carrying a bag of Lightning cables.
There is a free cycle in Portland, and I was recently doing this exact same thing, but with micro USB cables. And so I put them all in the box and I sent it out the door and I kicked and spat on it on the way out.
Wow. Intense.
I know. I had a lot of feelings.
Is that
about
therapeutic?
It was.
Sounds it.
Before we move on, Julian, I want to give you an opportunity to do a quick lightning round about what else.
No pun intended.
stood out about the new phones.
Well, I guess it's really the Pro models, like the standard.
Titanium.
Right, yes, titanium. Titanium was the big one.
Are we going to miss an opportunity to sing along? Because you
have like 15 seconds of that. Yeah.
Titanium is the new material that they're using for the Pro models. It is surprisingly very light. When you pick up the iPhone 15 Pro Max, you're just like, kind of feels cheap because, you know, that lightweight, cheap feeling sometimes some products have. But no, it's just titanium. It's lighter weight metal and more durable. There's now an action button on the Pro models only. So that got rid of the mute switch, which has been on the iPhone since 2007. So now instead of just flipping a switch, you can press the button to customize it to different actions like muting the phone, or there's actually even ways to connect it to Siri shortcuts so you can control it, like have it push the button to turn on all your home lights or something like that.
Can I just say, I think that's going to be a disaster. I'm going to fumble that button so many times and trigger so many things I don't want to trigger. I will see. I haven't tried it yet. But truly, I'm not being coy. I don't have that phone. I haven't tried it yet. But like, we'll see. I'm just going to put a pin in that one.
It does a little animation on the dynamic island that suggests like press and hold the thing to activate whatever you've set it to. So it's not necessarily, I think, always going to just be a single press, but I think there's some customization options there. It is definitely a weird change that they just decided to do, I guess maybe to have it fall in line with the Apple Watch because that button exists on that. The cameras, I guess. There's now the Pro Max has the exclusive 5x optical zoom camera, which not something we haven't seen before. Samsung has 10x optical zoom. Google has 5x optical zoom. So that's just sort of an extra perk that you get with paying that $1,200 price tag for that model. They also have been doing this weird thing where they keep saying, you have 7 lenses in one phone, because now they're counting macro. And then they're now splitting a lot of these zoom modes into just like, they're calling it 24mm, 28mm. I'm like, no one cares about this. No one knows what this stuff is except pro photographers. And we know pro photographers aren't the only ones buying pro iPhones. Everyone buys pro iPhones too. So it's very confusing to me, and it's just digital zoom, I think. So it's weird. But those are, I think, like the main highlights. There's a lot I could spend time on talking about all the other smaller stuff, but that's like the big takeaways.
Well, we should mention that you did write a news post about the new phone that has a lot of those details in it. And we should expect to see some reviews in maybe a few weeks.
Yes.
Or sooner. Julian's article is called Apple's iPhone 15 Marks a New Era. It's one of our most popular stories this week, so everyone can read that on Wired.
All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Each episode features insight you won't find anywhere else from the center of the conversation surrounding emerging technologies like AI. Right now on the podcast, you can hear a special episode where Brad Smith lays out Microsoft's vision for a vibrant marketplace driving the new AI economy. To hear more, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Larson, the reviews director of Pitchfork, and this podcast is supported by Pitchfork Music Festival. Pitchfork Music Festival will take place July 19th through the 21st at Union Park in Chicago, Illinois. This year's lineup features Jamie XX, Alanis Morissette, Black Pumas, Carly Rae Jepsen, Brittany Howard, Jay Paul, Muna, Jesse Ware, 100 Gex, and many more. The festival also features diverse vendors as well as a specialty record, poster, and craft fairs, and works to support local businesses while promoting the Chicago arts and food communities as a whole. For more information on tickets and lineup, visit pitchforkmusicfestival.com.
Okay, welcome back. I feel like we've exhausted the iPhone as a topic forever, even though we haven't even come close. But we do have to move on. So I want to talk about the watch. Adrian, this is your domain. You're the watch expert on the panel.
Okay. The most important thing for me was that I was all hyped up on a new watch color, and I was really convinced. Like, me and a lot of people were really convinced it was going to be black. Turns out it was pink, and all of those jokes I was saving, I had to immediately delete. And so that was the thing I was like,
give us a preview. What were some of the jokes?
I don't know. It was like, you know, taking the black, the night's watch. I mean, come on. You know, they were all just lined up. They were teed up, ready to go. I had to throw them all out. So that was the main thing.
That was
I'm done now.
That was the
I'll be leaving. Okay. So Apple did come out with updates to two of their watches yesterday. Both the Series 9 and the Watch Ultra 2 have the new S9 chipset. In addition to being, you know, faster and more efficient, there's a lot more things that you're able to do with a faster chipset. And the main thing that they announced yesterday was Double Tap. They've taken some of the things they've learned from Assistive Touch, which has been around. This is Apple's disability program. Like, if you have mobility issues, since about the Series 4, you've been able to like clench or make gestures with your hands to do critical actions on the watch. But with the Series 9 and the Apple Watch Ultra, you can just double tap, you know, tapping your index finger and your thumb together, and you can use it to stop and start workouts or stop and start music. I got to have a preview of it yesterday, and it was really cool. Like, I can totally imagine, one of my hobbies is rock climbing and running, and I never remember to stop or start workouts. And so if you're like clinging to a rock face, it's with one hand, it's pretty convenient to be able to do things on your watch with the other hand and not flail off into outer space. So that's pretty cool.
And just to be clear, when you say double tap, you mean like you're making a gesture right now that people can't see, but you're tapping two fingers together.
Yes.
So you're not tapping the watch itself.
No, that's an important clarification to make. It's not your like non-watch hand. That is the one that's like holding your coffee, carrying the baby, clinging to the wall, like, and then you're tapping your index finger and your thumb of your watch hand together. It's using the gyroscope, the accelerometer, and this is the crazy part. They're actually tracking minute blood flow with the optical sensor. Like, they're sensing the blood that is flowing to your fingers. This whole time I was just like, they are tracking my heart rate as it skyrockets every time I get a slack. Like, that is the thing that they're tracking. But no, they're actually measuring the muscle movement of your fingers tapping together, which was crazy.
Wild.
Yeah. Oh, and the other big thing that I almost totally forgot about, Apple claims that the watch is carbon neutral.
How do we feel about that?
I know. But the thing is, like, it's only if you buy a specific watch with the specific case, and the case has to be like recycled nylon. And I was just like, is that really going to happen? There's like 40 zillion Apple watch bands out there. Like, nobody's going to like ditch their Hermes band or whatever, their Milanese loop.
Some people will, for sure.
Yeah.
Also, is it carbon neutral because of the way that they're manufacturing it, or because they're buying offsets?
It's part manufacturing. Like, there's recycled cobalt and other recycled materials in the watch. And then that was another interesting thing, was that they are purchasing carbon offsets to offset the emissions from charging the watch throughout the lifespan of the watch.
So those offsets, they work sort of like saying Hail Marys after confession at church, right?
Trigger warning.
I mean,
unless you went to Catholic school.
They make you feel better?
Yeah, sure. Penance.
Yeah. But do they actually have an impact, I think, is the big question that a lot of people are asking today and this week.
Yeah, I think it's something we've been asking continuously in our coverage at Wired of environmental policies that are being established by big tech companies like Microsoft and Google and Apple. A lot of them have relied on offsets to establish some form of carbon neutrality. And Greenpeace and other organizations will point to that and basically say it's not enough. I think we're going to be doing more reporting on this because more and more of the tech companies are going to come out with initiatives like this, and that's our job.
Yeah.
I know. It's a big puzzle, and the edges of it are always shifting. For example, one of the new materials that they announced yesterday for the new watch bands is fine woven, which is a kind of suede-like material that's intended to replace the use of leather. Cows burp a lot, but also, you know, is plastic, even recycled plastic, a really good thing to be encouraging more people to buy? So There's a lot of math that I'm not sure if it really maths out.
Yeah. Recycled plastic is not perfect, mm-hmm. but it is better than creating virgin plastic, right? Mm-hmm. Reusing plastic that's already in the ecosystem is better than creating new plastic that clogs up the ecosystem even more. We are already completely screwed when it comes to how much plastic we put on this planet. So if we can reuse some of it for our I believe it's going into watch straps. It's going into cases. Mm-hmm. It's going into AirTag holder keychains.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I actually did a story a couple of years ago on this case manufacturer that was making biodegradable plastic cases. And when I spoke to some experts, they were, you know, they were like, that's great because these cases are plastic, but they can biodegrade in landfill conditions within 2 years versus, you know, 1,000 years for whatever plastic takes. But those same experts were like, great, but why can't they just use materials that are not plastic or just, you know, alternative types like bamboo cases or some other types of materials? And that's sort of, you know, the same case here where it's like, great that it's recycled plastic, but it would be great with Apple's capital if they could explore materials that maybe were just completely fine for the environment, especially since their cases are often, you know, inevitably going to end up in a landfill at some point. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right. So Apple spent a lot of time talking about their environmental efforts. They did not spend a lot of time talking about USB-C, and they also did not spend a lot of time talking about iCloud. But Lauren, you noticed this because it popped up at the end of the keynote and you jumped on it and wrote a great story about it. Can you please tell us the changes that are coming to iCloud Plus?
Oh, well, thank you for that, Mike. It also helps that you have an editor when you're like, hey, I'm going to write about this. And your editor says, go forth. So yeah. Thanks. At the very end of the event, Greg Joswiak, a longtime Apple executive, said, oh, by the way, we're going to be expanding our iCloud Plus options. This is premium iCloud. You get 5 gigabytes of iCloud free whenever you buy an iDevice. But then after that, you start paying for it. And these two new tiers of iCloud pricing got a pretty enthusiastic response from the crowd there. I would say even more enthusiastic than the announcement of USB-C, maybe because people knew USB-C was coming. And they're expensive. There's one that offers you 6 terabytes of storage for $30 a month. And the next option is going to be double the price for double the storage, $60 a month for 12 terabytes of iCloud. That's a lot of iCloud, and that's also very expensive. But to me, this really points to the future of Apple, which is really what the story is about. That as hardware sales slow, and this is not just an Apple phenomenon, this is globally, we've talked about this before on earlier episodes of Gadget Lab, smartphone sales are slowing around the globe. The market is pretty much saturated. People are replacing their new phones less frequently. You can get a really good secondhand phone. Mid-range phones are pretty great. Macroeconomic factors, all these reasons, people are being slower to upgrade their phones. And last quarter, Apple reported a 2% dip in iPhone sales. Now, that is like typically kind of a slow quarter, the summer quarter for Apple, because everyone knows the new iPhone is coming in September. But the area of Apple's business that grew tremendously was its services business. And services includes things like iCloud, App Store, Apple Music, Apple TV Plus, its credit card, which we can only get here in the United States. I have one. Pretty great credit card
also
experience.
Titanium.
I never thought I'd say those words. It's a pretty great credit card. Yeah. Also titanium. Yeah, but like this is all part of Apple's ballooning services business. And this is like a huge part of the company's future. And so really like the iCloud thing, it was remarkable to me that they were just like, it was like an offhand, oh, by the way. And I was like, this is like it. This is where we're all headed, paying Apple like $50 to $60 a month to store our stuff.
And I think it's important to note that the new Pro model phone, it has the capability to capture spatial video, right? Which is basically video that has 3D metadata in it. And it does this by capturing depth information while you're shooting video. And it uses 2 cameras. Those files are bigger. They also have a headset coming out next year, the Vision Pro, that is going to be able to do spatial stuff on it. You may need more storage for whatever you capture, whatever you consume for that. So like our needs as users of these devices for data storage is also growing. The photos are bigger than ever.
Totally.
The lossless audio files are bigger than ever.
Yeah, Julian brought up a good point as we were gapping before we started taping. All of the photos you capture now are going to be at a minimum 24 megapixel images. And then the, you know, onboard storage for iPhones has not changed. You're still starting with 128 gigabytes of internal storage for most phones, except for the brand new Pro Max phone, which is going to start at 256 gigabytes of storage. So on the device itself, people are just going to start running out of storage much more quickly with this super heavy media that they're trying to store on their phone. And so they're just going to keep going more and more towards iCloud. And that is a big service for Apple.
And that's not even to mention like the, you know, whole Apple ecosystem. And I'm not sure if I am the only one who actually pays for like Apple Arcade and like, you know, their commitment to like online mobile gaming. And it was just like, oh my God, are you going to be able to play like Assassin's Creed on your phone? And whether that is actually going to happen, or now that the Apple Watch is becoming a much more capable sports watch and able to measure all of these, you know, much more advanced metrics, if people are actually going to start using Fitness Plus or any of the attendant, like the more storage you offer and the more services they have, the more thoroughly you get enmeshed in this
totally.
System.
Yeah, especially if you have kids, right? And your kids happen to have iPhones or iPad touches too, then they're into the gaming and they're taking lots of photos and all that stuff. And so, you know, it makes sense if you have some kind of family bundle at some point to pay that much for iCloud. But the lock-in is a great point too. And if I may give a little shameless plug for my other podcast, Have a Nice Future, another Wired podcast that we taped this week with Cory Doctorow, we get really nerdy, but it's a delightful conversation about lock-in, ecosystem lock-in, and a lack of interoperability between services and switching cost, which is an economics term for basically the hassle of taking all your data from one service and deciding to move to another. Because it's such a great hassle, a lot of people don't bother to do it. So when you start paying Apple $60 per month for iCloud, you store your whole life in there, your family's whole life in there. You're not only paying that upfront cost, but eventually you could be paying a switching cost if you ever decided to leave. And so that's pretty much how they get you behind the walls of that beautiful garden.
I mean, that's exactly what happened to our family. I have a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old who already know how to operate their own Apple Watches and their own iPads. And, you know, they're basically creating consumers at an embryonic level, almost like they come out of the womb already, you know, able to double tap. This is what.
All right. Well, that feels like a good place to end. Thank you for that image.
You're welcome.
Let's take another break and then we'll come back with our recommendations.
Hey, everybody, it's Neil. I've got some huge news. Decoder is moving to Mondays and Thursdays. We're adding a second episode of the show. On Mondays, we'll have our classic interviews with CEOs and other troublemakers.
I think we're going to have to start having conversations about how do we pay those jobs that can't be done by AI.
And on Thursdays, we'll be explaining big topics in the news with Verge reporters, experts, and other friends of the show.
There's a new generation of people on the internet. Google search has always sucked for them. So, you know, there's no reason for them to be loyal. They can just go to TikTok.
This is going to be really fun. I'm very excited about all this. So go subscribe wherever you get your podcasts now.
Okay, this is the last part of the show where we go around the table, literally this time, because we're not on Zoom for once. And we ask everybody to give us a recommendation that our listeners might enjoy. Adrian, you go first. What is your recommendation?
I have two, and you can't stop me. It's to go online and watch the Tim Cook Octavia Spencer skit, which is online. And there's like an actual part in it where you can see Tim Cook and Octavia Spencer like go head to head. And you're like, okay, for one of you, acting is your job. And the other one, it is not. But my actual recommendation is I'm wearing them right now. They're the Ripton hiker jeans. Last year I wrote a piece about how they're jorts, and I did it. I got the word jorts on this podcast. It's they're super, you know, they're super stretchy. They look like jeans and they're incredibly wearable. I've been putting my like biking briefs under them. I wear them rock climbing and hiking and they look like jeans, and I in no way look like I'm capable of doing anything. And they have like the longest jorts ever. They have jants, they have jeans now, and they are incredible. They're like they're high-waisted, super stretchy, super comfortable. They've got like gussets all over the place, so you can, you know, mountain bike or do whatever you want in these. And they've got like zip pockets, they've got studded buttons at the cuffs, so I can like cuff them up and like put them in my little wellies when it starts raining in Oregon.
So what you're saying is that they are configurable for many different types of footwear for the active person.
Many types of footwear, many types of activities. I was climbing with a friend this summer and she was like, have you been wearing the same jorts this whole time? And I was like, yes. And now I can have the same pair all through the winter. So it rolls.
Ripton.
How much
are they? They're 118. They come in a bunch of like, yeah, I think they have a bunch of different washes. There's like an acid washed one if you want to go like full Bret Michaels this winter. So.
And there's men and women's cuts.
Yes. And they have overalls too. So.
Nice. Yeah. Good rec.
Good recommendations. Oh, we should also note too that regarding Octavia Spencer's participation in the Apple event, that was a pre-taped thing. And I asked an Apple spokesperson about it because of the SAG strike. And they seemed like pretty concerned about how Apple was going to be perceived and immediately got back to me and said that commercials and promotional work for brands and retailers are not impacted by the SAG strike. So that is how Octavia was able to tape that.
Hallelujah.
Yep. Thank God.
Okay, Julian, you get to go next. What is your recommendation?
My recommendation is something that blew our video producer Alicia's mind at the Apple event. I brought a, it's called the AnchorWork M650. Not a great name.
Cool name.
It tells you nothing of what it does. but it is essentially just wireless microphones. And the just beauty of it is that it comes in like almost like a wireless earbuds case. And it's all like magnetically pops into their own slot and they all charge automatically. The case acts like a charging brick as well. And it has a little transmitter and they come with a cable that you can connect to your camera. But they also come with two little adapters that you can use to switch between Lightning and USB-C. So it was just super handy to just quickly switch between devices and you could just throw the thing on someone's shirt. All wireless, no cables, and the sound quality is great. It did great noise cancellation in like a very, very, very loud, you know, hands-on demo area. And Alicia was, mind was blown. And so I was like, wow, you know, I should get this, the word of this thing out there a little bit more.
Nice.
So not this, that Anchor needs introductions or anything, but they right. make all the popular accessories and all.
This is Anchor, A-N-K-E-R.
Yes, they make all the popular accessories, all on Amazon. Anchor Work is just like their, I don't know, work titling for more professional
it's
folks.
Pro.
Yeah,
it's pro.
It's a pro product, I guess. But yeah, if you need to record yourself and have someone else also in the little thing, then you can just use this one thing. And it's I think it's about $250.
As someone who Alicia has had to personally mic up for multiple events and who tends to go to events dressed in jammies, like she has like spent so much time like trying to like thread all of her wires and like clip things onto my clothes. And then the fact that she could just like put something on my shirt and then just walk off like things like it was. Yeah, it's the USB-C port of portable mics. So.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
Solid. Okay, Lauren. What's your recommendation?
I'm going to caveat this with I haven't actually listened to this podcast episode yet, but I'm going to, and I'm so certain I'm going to love it that I'm going to recommend it to our listeners. And let's just say, like, hypothetically, maybe the reason why I wasn't able to listen to it this morning in the car is because I went to go plug in a cable in my car this morning that was suddenly unusable for reasons I shall not get into. I may be under an embargo. But yes, I wasn't able to listen to this podcast episode in the car this morning as I was planning to. It's Smartless. I've recommended Smartless on the show before. Love those guys. But it's Smartless interviewing Kara Swisher, who is a friend of the Gadget Lab pod. She has been on the pod before. She's also my landlord. I rent one of Kara Swisher's properties. I used to work with her. I used to work for her. We've known each other for a very long time, and she's not giving me a reduction on rent for pimping this podcast episode. But I mean, I can't imagine two things I would enjoy more coming together than the Smartless guys and Kara. And so she's on the show this week. So that's what I'm going to be listening to. And I recommend that everyone else give it a listen as well. Apparently, they ask her a lot about AI.
Oh.
Yeah. This is what I hear.
Okay.
Yeah. That's all I have to say. Yeah. She messaged me something else last night. And I said, I can't believe you didn't include me when you went to go to the, I would have like just fangirled, like, you know, the Smartless taping. And she said it was remote. Well, I could have lurked on Zoom. I mean, I don't, you know, the that wouldn't have been weird at all.
Yeah, the fact that you would have fangirled, I think, is why she did not.
No, I mean, I know how to, I know how to keep it under wraps. Okay. Yeah, but that's what I recommend.
Nice.
And Mike, the person who has steered our excellent Apple coverage all week this week, What's your recommendation?
It has nothing to do with Apple or even apples.
Nice.
But it is food. I want to recommend shata.
Say more.
It is a Levantine hot sauce. So it's a hot sauce that comes from, I think there are like Yemeni variants. Most of the shata that we encounter here in the US is from like Lebanon or Palestine or Jordan. So this is a hot sauce that is pretty common in Eastern Mediterranean cuisine. It is also pretty common around the world in other variants. It is nothing but crushed fermented chili peppers with salt and vinegar and olive oil. There are many different ways to make it. There are also many different ways to buy it, but it is super versatile and I've been using it on just about everything. So whatever you normally put hot sauce on, right? Like your eggs, pizza, sandwich, bowl of hummus. I don't know. What do people put hot sauce on? Whatever you put hot sauce on, you can put shata on and it is delightful. If you've ever gotten like a falafel or a shawarma and they said, would you like it spicy? And you said, yes, they're putting shata on your falafel and your shawarma. So it's that flavor. It's kind of tangy. It's pretty spicy. The stuff that you buy at the store is generally not too spicy. There are some very common brands that you can find at like Whole Foods and all of the, you know, sort of globally minded food purveyors in big cities. I think Sadoff is one of the brands. I can't remember the name of the other one. I would recommend that you go for the ones that are like the hardcore Palestinian hot sauces, the Palestinian shata, or like the hardcore Yemeni shata. That stuff is awesome because it's like twice as hot and it's twice as tangy and usually comes in a bigger jar, so you get a lot more of it.
Okay, Mike, on a scale of like Frank's buffalo sauce at 1 and like pure capsaicin at 10, like what, like where on the scale is shata?
Oh, well, I mean 3 or 4, because hot sauces are crazy. But I will say that it is hotter than like your average hot sauce that you get at like Taco Bell or that's on the table at your diner. But it provides the same kind of heat, but it's more flavorful because it's fermented for one, but also it's really tangy and like acidic.
Is it that like bright red color?
Yeah, it's crushed chili peppers.
What have you been?
It can also be green.
What is your favorite thing to eat shata on? That's the first time I've ever said that word out loud.
Avocado toast.
Oh, that sounds friggin' delicious.
Yeah, I do like 2 slices of toast and then a layer of shata, and it's kind of runny, so you gotta like eat it fast because otherwise it'll soak through the bread, and then like avocado on top of that, and then za'atar on top, and it's delightful.
You're never gonna be able to afford a home if you keep eating shata and avocado toast.
I think it's fine. I think we're all gonna be fine. All right, well, thank you all of you for your recommendations, and thank you all of you for being here in San Francisco with us this week.
Super great to have you guys in studio.
Thank you.
Yay,
for having us.
So happy to be here in person.
And thanks to all of you for listening. If you have feedback about our show, you can find all of us on the various social medias. Just check the show notes. Our producer is the excellent Boone Ashworth, and we will be back next week. Until then, goodbye. And we will be back next week. Until then, goodbye.
Oh my god, what great timing.
Perfect timing. That was great. So great.
All right.
Hackers and cyber criminals have always held this kind of special fascination.
Obviously, I can't tell you too much about what I do.
It's a game. Who's the best hacker? And I was like, well, this is child's play.
I'm Dina Temple-Raston, and on the Click Here podcast, you'll meet them and the people trying to stop them.
We're not afraid of the attack. We're afraid of the creativity and the intelligence of the human being behind it.
Click here. Stories about the people making and breaking our digital world.
AI machine.
Satellite. Engine ignition.
Click here.
And liftoff.
Click here. Every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
From PRX.